Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We just want, like, nice, cool fall weather like we had yesterday. Today was nice, though. Today wasn't bad. Today wasn't as bad as the Nationals' bats were. And that seventh inning. Woof. Man. Tell you what. I started talking about this maybe about a little less than a week ago. I said, look, and of course people got after me and people got mad at me. I said, the Nationals better just like start worrying about whether they're going to get in, as opposed to where they're going to play, who they're going to play, where they're going to eat, and who's going to pitch. And maybe that's not the way the players are actually thinking, but it seemed like it was a foregone conclusion in many people's eyes that the Nationals were absolutely a shoo-in when they had, what, a three-game lead over the Cubs for the wild card, and basically anywhere from four and a half-ish type game lead over the next team. So they had cushion, and there was no doubt that they had cushion. But I've been watching baseball since I was 5 years old. I remember the Mets back in the last year of Shea Stadium. They had like an 8-game lead on September 1st, and they gagged it all away. I was at the final game at Shea Stadium for MLB Network Radio, a place I grew up at, and you couldn't have told me anything that the Mets wouldn't have made the playoffs in the positioning that they were in at the beginning of September, and yet there it was, throwing up all over themselves and done, and the stadium was done and knocked down the next day. The Nationals clearly never had that kind of cushion. They never had that kind of buffer. But they had a fairly sizable lead, or at least a fairly sizable cushion, right? About as good as you could ask for. And we all knew, playing at the clip that they were playing at from, say, Memorial Day Friday, May 24th, and let's just use until Labor Day, which is when this stretch of struggles really started. We all knew that that was unsustainable to play at that level. This team is not that good, quite honestly. It's just not that good. Bullpen stinks. The bats were due to cool off. And the starting pitching, while being the bell cow, while being trumpeted as, you know, wow, we strike out everybody on God's green earth. Sure. Great. And they can absolutely be each dominant. Strasburg, Scherzer, Patrick Corbin. They can each be dominant. But they don't always get as deep as they need to get. Last night was a perfect example, right? Monday night was a perfect example. They got away with it last night. They didn't get away with it on Monday night. Today, they tried. They had Scherzer throwing BBs out there. And they got a little bit unlucky. Juan Soto loses a ball in the sun. Why we're playing a 12-15 game in St. Louis where it's 178 degrees and bright sunshine, I don't know. I give up. I give up trying to figure out Major League Baseball. I don't know. I don't know. We can play a 4 o'clock game. You know, they'll get to Miami fine, you know, but we're going to play deep into the night when the Nationals have to go from Minnesota to Atlanta, back home to take on Atlanta, so that they get home at 6:30 or 7 o'clock in the morning. But today we had to play a game at 12:10 in St. Louis where nobody was there. I mean, you know, we talk about the attendance issues all the time at Nationals. I mean, to be fair, that's a beautiful ballpark. That's a baseball town among baseball towns, and zippy people were there. Nobody. Why? Because everybody's in school and everybody's working and nobody wants to sit outside in 108-degree nuclear heat. I don't know why we had to play that game at 12. I guarantee you Juan Soto wouldn't have lost that game, lost that ball in the sun, if we had started that game at 4:05 local time or 3:05 local time. Guarantee you that wouldn't have happened. So they get an unfortunate break after Max gets the first two outs in the bottom of the seventh. And you're thinking, this is vintage Max, right? He's gassing 96 to 97. Just blowing people away. Yeah, sure, he gave up the home run in the third inning. Okay, that's going to happen. And then you get that unfortunate break. And again, it's not an error. I mean, he just lost in the sun. He couldn't see. Then Max gives up the go-ahead single. It wasn't a go-ahead single. It was already 2-1. Makes it 3-1. Again, with two out. You think you're out of the inning. And then he gives up the two-run home run to, of all people, Matt freaking Wieters. Matt Wieters. How many big hits did Matt Wieters have in his 2 years with the Nationals? I can think of one. Maybe two. Matt Wieters. And the Nationals lose 5-1. No offense. Couldn't capitalize on a couple of St. Louis errors. Terrible, awful, disgustingly horrid job by Bob Senley waving Victor Robles around, who was out by about 12 and a half feet, maybe 13. No chance. Victor Robles, who's fast. No chance. No chance. Zero chance. I mean, there's one thing about being aggressive. Like, there's a lot of people that are aggressive in life. Please don't be reckless and aggressive. That's why I always scream at you lunatics out on the road. You're not only aggressive, but you're reckless and aggressive. You're stupid. Today, Bob Senley, I like the guy. I met him at Nats Winterfest. He's a good singer. He sang me a Christmas carol and everything. Nice guy. Very smart guy. He's too over-aggressive. We all know that. That's why we call him Bob Senley. Way too over-aggressive. I guarantee you, if you get a side-by-side shot, Robles wasn't even at third base when the throw was starting to come in from the outfield. And you have the top of the lineup coming up. Huh? You thwart a huge opportunity there. A huge opportunity. So the Nationals lose 5-1. We will see what happens the rest of the way tonight. Cubs, Cincinnati. That game is just after 8 o'clock. We'll keep you up to date while we're on the air about that one and more. 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. The Nationals race for a red October. On the Fan, presented by PVI Office Furniture, fast, affordable, excellent. Fast, excellent, affordable. Let's try that again. Business grows with PVI. Visit their showroom in Frederick, Maryland, or online, PVIPVI.com. Yes, that's right, PVIPVI.com. Your calls. How worried on a scale of 1 to 10 are you that the Nationals are even going to make the playoffs? Never mind who's going to pitch and where they're going to be and who they're going to take on. 800-636-1067. Let's start there. We'll get to the Skins in the 7 o'clock hour on the Fan. All right, we welcome you back. It is overtime on the Fan. We approach 7 o'clock. Earl Forsey will join us after the top of the hour. You can also listen to him on the top and the bottom. Rich Campbell will join us from the Chicago Tribune. Bears beat writer, former Redskins beat writer. At 9 o'clock, my buddy Wes McElroy from 910 The Fan in Richmond will join us at about 8:30. But we have plenty of time for you at 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. We'll probably re-rack a clip of Daniel Jeremiah with Dukes about the Dwayne Haskins potential. As well, I want to get into this whole Cam Newton, Eli Manning stuff that people were screaming about on television. Ryan Clark, former Redskin, and Paul Feinbaum going at it. Whatever. I mean, the next time I listen to either one of those two guys for their opinions, I'm sorry, not doing it. I don't care. Good night. I don't care. The Nationals, again, lose today. They did salvage one of three. They did win a series last week in Minnesota. They lost the series 2 out of 3 to Atlanta. They lost 2 out of 3 to the Mets, should have been swept. Then lost 3 out of 4 to Atlanta. Again, then took 2 out of 3 from Minnesota, lost 2 out of 3 to Atlanta, and now 2 out of 3 in St. Louis. Clearly, it goes without saying, the Nationals are not reeling, but they are clearly, you know, in a stretch of their schedule where the opponents are much tougher than it was while they were kicking everybody's ass and taking names. They are still 15 games over 500. But again, the Cubs still have to play tonight. They play Cincinnati. And right now, there's just not a lot of buffer room. The Nationals only have a one-game lead with a day off tomorrow. They should be plenty rested because we know, again, as we bitched about, they're getting to Miami tonight, and then the boys will have an entire day off on South Beach. The boys better be ready to sweep the Marlins over the weekend, which they've done the last several times. But that they desperately need that because they're only one game up over not only the Cubs, but Milwaukee. I didn't realize Milwaukee was the same and even as they play San Diego, a team that's playing out the string, 15 games under 500. Same thing for the Cubs. You know, the Reds had a pretty good start to the year. The Reds are now 10 games under 500. Theoretically, both teams theoretically, should win their game tonight, and the Nationals' lead will be a half game in the wild card over two teams, assuming that they both win. They're both 82 and 69, so good chance they'll be 83 and 69 each. Again, that's why you play the games, and if they are, then they'll be a half game behind the Nationals. Going into the final 11 games of the season. Because remember, they have a 5-game set coming up against Philadelphia in 4 days. All right, 800-636-1067. Are the Nats in your... I don't know how you could say they're a shoo-in for the playoffs, but have we misjudged this team based on what we saw from Memorial Day Friday to Labor Day Monday? Because that was the stretch where they kicked everybody's ass. But remember, there was a lot of Marlins in that. There was a lot of Kansas City, well, not a lot of, but there was some Kansas City Royals and some Detroit Tigers. And not every time, but most of the time during that stretch when they played really good teams, i.e. the Braves, the Dodgers, yeah, they'd lose 2 out of 3. They wouldn't get swept, but they'd lose 2 out of 3. Which was always a little worrisome to me. You can only play who your schedule dictates that you play. But I always wondered in the back of my mind, okay, are they just eating off of the soft part of their schedule? And I don't want to say, yes, that is absolutely the case, but that's what it appears to be because they don't have a lot of buffer room right now. I don't even know if they're going to make the playoffs. Again, at 3 at Miami, 5 against Harper and the Phillies, yes, at home, that's a good sign. And the Phils might be, depending on what they do this weekend, you know, they might be basically eliminated by then. But you know they're still going to want to compete and play hard in that series, especially Harper. And again, you're not only dealing with one team, Cubs, you're dealing with two teams, Milwaukee. Now, Milwaukee, of course, does not have Yelich. That helps. 800-636-1067. Let's get to Brian in Fairfax real quickly here before the top of the hour. What's up, Brian? How are you?
Hey, doing good, Chris. But I don't mean to burst your bubble, but I mean, 2 weeks ago, I don't know who you're talking to, but in my circle, I was worried about the Nats 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago while they've been losing this lead. It's not going out of the bounds saying that they have a chance of not making the playoffs. I don't believe they're going to make the playoffs. I mean, this team has had a history of when their bats get cold, they're cold. They're either hot or they're cold, and at the wrong time they get cold. And if you don't have a pitcher that can, you know, go eight innings without a run, our bullpen is terrible. It's been terrible. So, I mean, it'd be a shock to me if they made the playoffs.
All right. So they could have a game lead. They could have a game and a half lead or a half game lead, you know, tonight, depending on how things work out. I guess it would be, it's a game lead right now. I mean, if the Cubs or Milwaukee lose, you know, it could be a game and a half, could be a half game, whatever. But 2 weeks ago, when they took on the Mets starting on Labor Day, I think they had like a 3.5 game lead over the Cubs, or maybe it was 3. I mean, I felt reasonably confident. I wouldn't say I felt confident. I was reasonably confident that they would probably make the playoffs, right? But I think most fans and media, and I mean, kudos to you if you're telling me that you felt this way 2.5 weeks ago, because, you know, you look at the schedule and combined with the schedule increasing in terms of its toughness, their bats have gone silent and their pitching is still inconsistent. So kudos to you if you were thinking way back then. I got to be honest with you, on Labor Day, I was thinking, off of a sweep against the Marlins, it's going to get tougher, but they're going to, you know, as long as they play 55, you know, as long as they play 550 baseball, they'll be fine. And here we are 2 weeks later, and I'm officially worried.
But also, like, Chris, mark my words, they will not sweep the Marlins. They will not.
I can't tell you you're crazy for that. They have the last couple of times, but I can't tell you you're crazy for that, especially being that you have the underbelly of the rotation going. You know, your Austin Voths and Strasburg will pitch. And we'll get into how they're trying to line up for the wild card game and the end of the season. We'll probably do that out of the chute in the 7 o'clock hour. We'll keep your calls coming here. 800-636-1067. Once again, the Nationals race for a red October on the Fan, presented by PBI Office Furniture. Fast, excellent, affordable business grows with PBI. Visit their showroom in Frederick, Maryland, or online at PBIPBI.com today on the Fan. Thank you very much, Earl Forsey. Earl will join us in studio here in just a wee little bit. Caps and the Stanley Cup champion. Yeah, that sounds weird. St. Louis Blues. Just underway at Capital One Arena. A little preseason NHL action. Alex Ovechkin, Nick Backstrom, TJ Oshie, Evgeny Kuznetsov, John Carlson, all participating in tonight's soiree. I don't know if Tom Wilson is. I don't think he is. That's probably a good thing. The last three times the Caps have played the St. Louis Blues in preseason, Tom Wilson has been suspended each of those games. Please stay away. It's amazing. I mean, last year he got the 20-game suspension, which, you know, again, he served 16, reduced to 14. The previous year, he got two different suspensions, one a two-game suspension, and then in the same preseason, much like they'll do this year, for whatever reason, they play the Blues twice in every preseason. I have no idea why. And then they'll also play 2 weeks from tonight in the season opener. It's just really weird in St. Louis. So Wilson's been suspended, again, three times for preseason illegal hits against the St. Louis Blues over the last 2 years. A two-game, a four-game to start the Stanley Cup year, and then the 20-gamer on Oscar Sundquist last year. All right, so we'll keep you a little bit up to date on that one. That one's just about underway. Looked up on my monitor, and I saw them warming up, but I guess they haven't dropped the puck just yet. We'll finish up on the Nationals here, and then we'll get into the Redskins. Earl Forsey is kind of settling in. You hear him at the top of the bottom. You hear him each and every Sunday morning for Washington Game Day Uncensored.
Yeah, I've been good luck for him, haven't
and
I?
Countdown to Kickoff. Well, you know, I've had to clean up the carnage the last two Sundays.
It's PJ's fault. PJ's fault.
It's all PJ's fault.
How is it my fault?
Picking the Redskins. You got to pick against them.
It's never happening again, I can tell you that much.
Well, you picked the Redskins the last two weeks?
We do picks. We do a I Want Winners segment, pick six. We pick five games in the Redskins.
Right.
And I picked against them twice with the spread. PJ's picked actually an outright win for them against Philly in week one.
I was looking good until halftime.
You were looking sweet.
Until the start of the third quarter.
And said on Twitter he will never pick them again this season.
And
wait
so
till week four. They're going to be a favorite against the Giants.
Well, listen. We're going to get into this.
I'll also take Miami.
Listen,
all right?
everybody thinks those are two shoe-in wins. Guess again. I mean, maybe Miami will be. But
nope.
I mean, there is no way. I mean, I just heard you play a Case Keenum. You know, we're getting to where we want to be. I wouldn't say that. You're not getting anywhere. You can't run the ball. It's holding a palooza. And Case Keenum has missed some throws. I mean, he hadn't been the problem, but we're getting a win.
There's many more problems aren't named Case Keenum.
I know.
On that team.
We're gonna debate it. Let's finish up on the Nationals.
Nationals. Still, according to ESPN, despite the loss today, I gloss this over when I'm doing the updates, trying to get them done quickly. But you got to.
We have to do the updates quickly around here?
Yeah, but, yeah, you know, we have to do what we can.
I get in trouble
because
we have to get
back to the rooster in overtime.
Yeah.
Got to get right back
and
get back into the show. But it's in essence now a three team for two playoff spot race in the NL.
Right.
So they had a 7-game lead over the first team out.
Right.
A couple of weeks ago they were up 4 for the top spot. Up 7.
Wasn't as high as up 4? I thought it was only 3.5.
It was as high as 7 games over that next team. That was the cushion a couple of weeks ago. So it's 1 over 2 teams now.
Yeah.
But the Cubs play the Cardinals 7 times in their last 10 games. So if one of those teams, in essence now, the Nats have to not have finished strong because the Nationals have 3 in Miami. You look at that series now, you think you got to sweep it, don't you? With 5 against Philly in 4 days and then all this stuff coming up. But ESPN still has the Nationals out of those three teams, even with only a 1-game lead. It could be down to half a game, maybe the numbers. But their playoff chances, according to ESPN this evening, still 91% chance.
I wonder if that's because, A, you got the 3 at Miami, and B, because Philadelphia might, by all intents and purposes, early in that series or even by the time we get to Monday, be essentially eliminated, and they might be playing out the string.
So everyone thinks it's over.
The fact is, you still have,
of the three teams, you have a 1-game lead on both of them, so you have an advantage on both teams. I know it's not where you want to be, but, you know, at this point in the season, it's better than where they were
two months into the season. There's no doubt about it. I just think there was so much talk about, and, you know, I was listening to Dukes with Eddie Matz, and I guess he wrote a column about who they should start in the wild. And I was thinking about this today during the game, too, and I was having a conversation. I said, you know, Scherzer is now lined up to pitch next Tuesday in one of the day-night doubleheader games, which puts him on track then to pitch next Sunday against Cleveland, if they need that game to extend their season and either force a play-in game for the wild card or in order to lock up a wild card spot. And if you don't need him that day, you can bump him to the wild card game. But Strasburg
is 2 nights later, October 1st.
Exactly. But Strasburg is now lined up as well.
Yeah.
If you need to go Scherzer next Sunday against Cleveland at home, and then Strasburg
next Tuesday, or the following Tuesday. If it comes down to that last game and you need to win to get in,
you're going.
I don't want to disparage Mad Max, but what do you do at that point?
I think they've already made that decision, though.
Right now they have. You can always change things up a little bit. But you've got all those games in a row
because Strasburg's going to pitch on Saturday on normal day rest, right?
It's a Bill Belichick schedule.
Right.
No days off.
So I don't think you can make that decision if you need that game. I think the decision's already been made unless they don't need Scherzer on that final Sunday of the regular season against Cleveland, then there's a decision to make, and I still think they're going Strasburg.
It's a topic, but remember we had Heist in here like a couple of months ago and I was bringing that up?
Yeah.
And nobody wanted to hear it because the feeling was, oh, he'll be out a couple of weeks. Scherzer will be back. He hasn't been back to where he was midway through the season yet.
I mean, he was good for the first six and change today, and then one little slip-up because the ball gets lost
series,
in the sun leads to—
It's one and done. Yeah. That's all it takes. I'm not saying Strasburg would be immune to that, but, you know, that's a pitcher on staff right now with maybe their biggest pitching performance in a must-win, much-needed playoff game, that the sick game for Strasburg and Chicago.
All right. The
under Dusty Baker.
Redskins back to work today on the practice field, getting ready for the Chicago Bears, an extra day of practice, so we get no injury report official. We know who was out there, who did some things, whatever. We'll have all those updates for you. But an 0-3 start, when you think back to how you were feeling just 2 weeks ago before the season, was an 0-3 start a reasonable outlook? Or was it completely unexpected? Because that's what they're staring down the gun barrel at. We'll get Earl's opinion on that. We'll get you guys aboard on that. And I'll give you my spin on that. 800-636-1067. In other words, are the Redskins where we expected them to be facing an 0-3 start? 800-636-1067 on Sports Radio 106.7 The Fan. Chicago Bears Monday Night Football at FedEx Field. That's gone swimmingly for the Redskins. Monday Night Football, that series has been a nightmare.
It's been because they haven't been good.
I know.
I mean, this whole Monday night thing. They were good
in 2015. They were pretty decent
Redskins
in 2016.
Were pretty decent on Monday Night Football when I was growing up.
I know.
But that was the 70s and 80s.
I know.
You know.
I know. They were coming off of a division title in 2015, and they got smoked at home by the Pittsburgh Steelers. And then
they had a primetime game.
I think two other times on Monday Night Football that year.
Prime time in general, they had the big win to make the playoffs. Remember the RG3 game 2012?
They've won some primetime games, weirdly enough, in big spots.
However,
the Green Bay Packers Sunday night game a couple of years ago where Kirk Cousins went crazy, that game that you're talking about. They won the Thursday night on Thanksgiving against the Giants two years ago, Samaje Perine.
And then they've also come up small.
And they've come up hard. But Monday Night Football specifically, right? They haven't won a game since October of 2014.
Yeah, I was just looking at that stuff, and I couldn't believe that. That is the Colt McCoy win in Dallas is the last Monday night game they have won.
Do you know 2014, how many times they sacked Tony Romo that game? Remember?
That's where they hurt Romo, didn't they? The back injury, the transverse process.
But they sacked him, I think, eight times in that game before they hurt him for good. Eight times. I mean, Hazlitt just unleashed the kitchen sink.
Do they have a pass rush now?
Well, no. I mean, you know, and of course that was before Dallas's offensive line was fully built. Quite honestly, I wonder if that's going to be some of what we see on Monday night, because they don't fear Mitchell Trubisky at all, I don't think.
You shouldn't.
Now, that being said, they're probably going to throw the kitchen sink a couple of times, and there's going to be a coverage breakdown.
Bears are averaging the same yardage, passing yardage per attempt, as they are averaging rushing yards per attempt. In essence, 4.6 yards
offense.
Per pass attempt, 4.5 per rush
attempt. It's a great number. They are the ultra definition of a pedestrian offense. That being said, Allen Robinson can still hurt you. I don't think many others can hurt you unless you miss tackles on Howard on a run or something like that. Maybe Cordarrelle Patterson.
And as good as Green Bay was at first game, if you watch it, Allen Robinson was catching balls all over the place.
Yeah.
Now he's the only guy they can throw to that he trusts, but there you go. Another big receiver, a guy that can catch 10, 11 passes. And who knows about their tight end is a
Trey
big
Burton.
Factor
yeah.
that I don't think he played last week either, did he? Did not play week one. But again, if that guy comes back, then,
We'll talk to Rich Campbell of the Chicago Tribune about all of this coming up at 9
o'clock. But Jordan Reed practiced. Fingers crossed.
All right, practicing hasn't been a problem for Jordan Reed.
Right.
I mean, outside of last Friday when he didn't practice, which is when we knew, okay, officially this had taken a sour turn, he practiced all week leading up to Philadelphia, and then they didn't clear him. I don't know if he had a setback, but they didn't clear him. Clearly, last week, he had a setback because, Earl, they said, in Jay Gruden's words, and I know he's not Dr. Jay Gruden, and he wants Larry Hess to take to the podium, which has never happened in the history of mankind, but they said he went – elevated in terms of team reps last Wednesday in preparation for the Cowboys. And by Thursday, all the reporters there, including Craig Hoffman, were saying, he didn't look right. Something was off. And he's limited. And then by Friday, he wasn't practicing.
But it was midway through the week. It looked like a done deal. J.P. Holtz was let go.
Oh, yeah,
so all the signs were there. And then
Where's J.P. Holtz?
It's been 5 weeks if he comes back since the injury.
How about this for a storyline that would drive you crazy, right? If J.P. Holtz actually plays in this game and catches a touchdown against the Redskins.
I mean...
Oh,
Jason
God.
Witten did last
the
week. Why not?
Line. Well, it's Jason Witten, for God's sakes. It kind of reminds me of like when Alfred Morris, who they thought, and they were correct, was done for the most part being a feature back, came back in his first game at FedEx in that 2016 season. I was at that game. It was 5 days after they got drubbed by the Steelers on Monday Night Football. Then the Cowboys waltz into town. And the crowd wasn't as bad at that point, but there's always been a ton of Cowboy fans. I mean,
they're worn out. Fans are worn out.
Yeah.
And what do you expect until the thing turns around? And if it does turn around, the fans will be back.
Yes.
I mean, it's a simple solution.
Yes.
Everybody wants to always talk about, we did last time with all this.
But it's got to turn around sustainably. I mean, it's not just a 5-2 start or 6-3 start last year.
No, well, I was in here 2012. I'll never forget, you know, when things were looking really good midway through the year with RG3.
The magic was there.
And it still was like pulling teeth to get people to kind of buy into the Redskins.
Yeah, but at the stadium, the magic was – I'm curious to – it's funny that you say that because I was – so caught up in being there, it felt like the magic was back in the stadium.
Well, people loved
not just
him,
for that
but
Sunday
they weren't
night,
ready
right.
to jump back
okay,
on that
well,
Redskins thing. When you know, I
but remember they started off 3-6 that year, so maybe that's part of it. It took them a while to buy in until they went on the magic carpet,
got on the turnaround. And that's what they're going to need now because 0-3 is odds aren't very good. 6 out of 176.
You came up with these great statistics. Yeah. You had 12.4% or whatever
today,
it was
too.
After 0-2. Of teams making the playoffs, I think it's 12 out of 100 and something or whatever it is. I don't have the exact number, but it's 12.3% or whatever it is of teams that have started off 0-2 and have made the playoffs. So obviously you're dealing with a very low number. 0-3, listen, it's doable. It was just done last year. The Houston Texans won a division still with the Indianapolis Colts. Having Andrew Luck in it, they were 0-3 to start.
0-2 used to be almost a death blow in the NFL. It's not so much anymore.
Right.
2007, 98 teams started 0-2. Only 12 have gone on to make the playoffs.
So that's the 12.whatever percent number, right?
Yeah, that's 12.2%, and it's worse, obviously, if you're 0-3, and it hasn't happened until last year in a while.
Right.
It was like 176, so it's 3.4%, which it was 5 out of 173 before Houston did it last year.
Right.
So the odds were actually in the twos. It was sub 3%. That actually brought the numbers up.
So you can recover even from an 0-3 start, especially against the gauntlet of a schedule that they've had.
Houston won 9 in a row to
recover
from it. Are the Redskins winning 9
in a row?
No.
But then again, you would say the same thing for Houston, although you had some reason to think, well, Deshaun Watson is a little bit rusty. They've got a premier elite wide receiver. They've got an elite defensive end. They've got an elite pass rusher.
Two of them at that time.
In Jadeveon Clowney, so on and so forth. So here's my question to you, Earl, and to the listeners at 800-636-1067. If they lose Monday night to the Chicago Bears, team that, again, won the division last year, team that should have won a home playoff game, they win 12 games last year, I believe it was. If they're 0-3, was that start reasonable in your mind and expected? Or are you bitterly disappointed by an 0-3 start? When you think back to how you were feeling just a week and a half ago, the morning of the
halfway
season
to the Philly game, disappointing.
Well,
because that's
halfway,
a game, that's a winnable,
I'm saying before,
done deal
before
game.
That, before that game.
No, I'm expected, no, but because, I mean, things are just so weird the first couple of weeks. You didn't know, you never know what to expect. But with Philly, Dallas, and Chicago, arguably three of the best teams in the NFC. Now, the Bears, we kind of said this before the season, they may be who we thought they were, which is not really the 12-4 team that they were a year ago, and they probably aren't that. 0-3 would be disappointing, but not it's not surprising, Russell. You've got in Philly and Dallas, arguably, and still arguably two of the two best teams in the NFC. Now, maybe the Rams, too, you can throw in there. But Philly's won a Super Bowl 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Dallas is probably the favorite one of
and
to win
made the playoffs
in the
last
NFC
year.
This year. So you started the year against division opponents, kind of rivals. Certainly Dallas is, and Philly's become one. And you started on the road in Philly and then had to try to bounce back. So that's not unreasonable. You drop those two games. I mean, that's why we maybe still don't know much about who the Redskins really are just yet. Okay, they can't beat the elite teams in the NFC. Is Chicago an elite team? We don't know. The Giants certainly aren't. So you have just as good a chance here the next 2 weeks to square it up. Now, I know New England's sitting on the schedule week five, but, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, rally the burgundy and gold here, but it's 0-2 against two probably if not the best teams in the NFC.
Right, and if you lose on Monday night, you're 0-3. Again, the Bears were really good last year, and they certainly are very good on defense, and you can argue that they're pedestrian on offense, but again, they still have a former number two overall pick, you know, at their quarterback position.
You're 7-9
with all the injuries
back-to-back
to the Redskins.
Years, right. You're injured already.
Yes.
You've put 10 guys on the IR already this year, 2.5 weeks into the season. 10 more in the injured list. You're starting against three playoff teams, so that all being said, if they do start 0-3, it's going to be a bitter disappointment. Is it surprising? No.
All right, so looking back, how you felt right before the season, was an 0-3 start reasonable in terms of your expectations because of the schedule and because of clearly knowing, again, what the Redskins had in store, the Case Keenum thing, the whole Adrian Peterson zoo, no Trent Williams, no Jordan Reed, or was it completely unexpected? How do you rationalize if the Redskins are 0-3? Is the season completely over, or do you look at it kind of like what we were just talking about, where you're starting to get into the soft underbelly of the schedule outside of the Patriots after that? 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. That's your toll-free number. We will get to you on the phones on the other side. But first, Earl Forsey's here with the latest Sports Flash. All right, we welcome you back. It is Overtime with you until 10 in the nation's capital and beyond. Along with Earl Forsey, I'm Chris Russell, PJ Elliott with us as well, and you at 800-636-1067. Was an 0-3 start, which the Redskins are staring at, if they lose on Monday night, which has been a house of horrors, FedEx Field, primetime, Monday night, all of that, Bears, great defense against, you know, a somewhat still pedestrian offense that can't run the ball. Of course, we know how bad the defense has been. Let's just put it this way. An 0-3 start is very reasonable. Coming into the season, I hoped they would be 1-2 after three. But in the back of my mind, did I think it was possible that they could be 0-3? Yeah, because they're not better than the Bears. And they weren't even before the injury. Or injuries. They're not better than the Cowboys. They're not better than the Eagles. So I hoped that they would be 1-2. If they lose this game, Earl, I still don't go, oh my God, this is an absolute nightmare. This was totally unexpected. I'm blindsided. I'm sorry. I just don't feel that way.
No. You had to steal one of the first two, was my kind of thought on it. And Philly was the game. Now, looking back, I mean, that's the one you had. You had that halfway one.
Or at least one of the first
but
three,
my,
right?
My thing is, but I mean, you certainly, yeah, because, look, and the fact is, if you don't beat the Giants, now right. You've got New England, then it's 0-5,
oh,
and then
yeah.
We're on
Oh, that
then we're on
that
coaching
would be completely
wise.
Unexpected. Yeah. I mean, I did not think they would be 0-5. I thought somewhere, somehow, some way, they would at least, at the worst, be 1-4. But honestly, I can't say I ruled out in my mind that they would be 0-3 after Monday night.
No,
only because
thought.
They weren't the better team.
Look,
even if they're healthy, they weren't the better team.
They were up 17-0, 20-7 in Philly, and I'm thinking after seeing the Bears play Thursday, I'm thinking you might go 2-1 to start the season.
No, you're right. Absolutely.
You know, sneak up on Dallas, maybe it's a 3-0. But you know, that's the Brewster, that's the NFL. And the fact is we can give you all what does it mean if you're 0-2 and 0-3? But Drew Brees is out for a while, maybe the whole season. Who knows? Just had surgery today.
Yeah.
Look what happened to Ben Roethlisberger in Pittsburgh. Look at what happened all around NFL.
Cam Newton
may or may not play
contenders
anymore.
Or perceived contenders, to your point, I think, are starting to fall by the wayside, and it's week two.
And Carson Wentz thrown to J.J. Arcega-Whiteside for a couple of weeks. DeSean Jackson, Alshon Jeffrey
And I will tell you this,
weeks.
Carson Wentz got the crap kicked out of him on Sunday night.
It's only a matter of time with him, I think.
It's only a matter of time. I mean, that dude is never going
to
make it.
So everybody wants to say, well, you know, how can you look at the playoffs? Because that's what the business is about.
Yeah.
It's trying to win games. It's professional sports. And as a fan of a team, you should be hoping, rooting for them, trying to find some way. I mean, Jay Gruden, all the players aren't going into this one going, well, we're going to lose this game.
No.
We're just gonna, no, I mean, come on. It's just, how fans have gotten to this point of wanting tanking and just trade away everything. I don't understand you people. I really don't. I'm embarrassed for you as a Washingtonian,
tank,
as
blow
a longtime
it up, do
Redskin
what the
fan.
Astros did. Do
I'm really,
what, you know,
I'm ashamed and I'm embarrassed
for
the fan base. And there's many of them now. Too many analytics. And I'm a fantasy football guy, but there's real football. There's fantasy football, and you know, this is a game. Certainly, the Redskins look. They've scored points and moved the ball against.
Pretty
as good a defense. Is Chicago a better defense?
Yes.
Maybe pressuring the
Chicago is clearly better on defense than the Cowboys or the Bears.
Or the Eagles?
Yeah.
Okay, well.
I think they're clearly better. Now, where they're way, 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 way different is they are, again, pedestrian on offense, and those two offenses that they went against when they're clicking on all cylinders, and I understand now you have all sorts of injuries to both teams, more the Eagles than the Cowboys.
Well,
those two offenses are clearly better than the Bears.
And you don't know what you're getting against the Giants in two weeks. It could be a disaster for Daniel Jones this week.
It could be.
We'll see.
I wish they were taking on Daniel Jones this week, but whatever. Let's get a quick call in here, and then we'll get the rest of the calls, I should say, in just a little bit. Let's go to Maurice in Lexington Park on the Fan. Maurice, how are you?
Yeah, hi, what's up, buddy? I expected it, but we actually even shocked me when we actually had Philly. But what gets me is that what's shocking me is I thought the defense of coordinators and them would help the guys out and blitz more. You don't just blitz four or show them four. You pit up six or seven at the line. You blitz one time. You do it. You help them out. They ask them. They want about sweat. Yeah, but look at somebody like Green Bay. They drafted, but they helped their defense out by doing different stuff. And same way with 49ers. Look at Kansas City. 49ers took Kansas City play, got their fastest man, and scored a touchdown the next week.
Right.
Jay Gruden is a copycat lead.
Well,
he just got it.
Well, before we get too deep into the woods here, here's what I would say. I think we would all agree that Greg Minuski can be more aggressive than he has been through two games, right? But I do think there's a very solid, legitimate reasoning for it, and I know most people disagree with me, but when you are missing two, if not three, starters, essentially in your secondary, and your best defensive lineman in Jonathan Allen, against two really premier offenses, that hurts what you can do. Yes, you can show more looks. Yes, on the interception by Monte Nicholson the other day, they showed a six-man blitz, dropped out, and only rushed four, but they got pressure, and they won with four. That's the problem, is that they're not doing that enough.
Exactly. Guess why? Because you don't have to blitz. But when the offensive line shouldn't say, I automatically got him.
You're saying because they showed the blitz, that's why they won.
Exactly.
They
don't know who to block.
I can't tell you you're wrong. I mean, Earl, clearly, and appreciate the phone call, Maurice. Earl, clearly, they have to be more aggressive. And if you listen to Jay Gruden so far through two press conferences this week,
they
are going to be more aggressive. But I don't think that's just because they've been so
bad.
What
are you going to do?
I think that's also because
they don't.
Secondary
even more?
Right, but it's also because they don't fear the Bears like they feared the Eagles and the Cowboys.
No, I wouldn't until Mitch Trubisky shows me.
That's the problem. What if he burns you because you can't get home
then,
or you can't get
then
up?
Then it's a death spiral. It's a 16, 17-week death spiral. If Mitch Trubisky comes into FedEx Field and lights up that defense, then what are you going to do? I mean, then
if he piles up three bills, is Greg Minuski gone Tuesday? I don't think so. Not on a short week.
I think you got to wait until he gets fried by Daniel Jones, unless he's forced to do it. That's probably a decision that the head coach doesn't make. In the end, it's probably above him if that happens. What is it going to change, though? you know.
I don't think it's going to change that much. I mean, you are what you are.
The key is trying to get, hopefully they get Jonathan Allen back, because when he was in there for whatever it was, the quarter, quarter and a half.
Less than a quarter.
It was a different looking defense. Yeah. But, you know, these ripple effects things. If he's in there, then the defense is maybe stopping the run better. Safeties, DBs don't have to support the run. They can play. You know, all that does have an effect. It's one guy missing is not just the one guy. It's if he's as good a guy as Jonathan Allen is and is important a piece, that's a huge piece. And now you're missing defensive backs, too. They had two DBs and Jonathan Allen out of the defense.
Well, again, people forget. Fabian Moreau is a starter on this team.
Yeah.
Quentin Dunbar is a starter on this team. Monte Nicholson, while he played Sunday, he had to be taken off the field for Amari Cooper's touchdown, and DeShazer Everett was playing and setting up camp in the end zone 10 yards off of Amari Cooper inside the 10-yard line.
And one of your other options is Troy Apke, who probably can't play.
Yes, and, oh, by the way, Josh Norman, and I know we're rough on him, but he hasn't been obviously good under any set of circumstances this year. So it's injuries, mass injuries.
He's not getting a lot of help either.
No, I understand that. You know. It's mass injuries, and it's the guy that you've paid the most, outside of Landon Collins, who has been fine, the guy you've paid the most, not performing
well
against
premier
offenses.
And they're doing, look, some of his injuries, Rooster, but they're doing a lot of signing guys off the street.
I know.
2 weeks into the season.
Aaron Colvin, from Seattle, now... DRC goes on, and Noah Spence
looking
might,
for something.
Noah Spence might
looking,
play this Monday night because McKenzie is banged up and because they need to get a little more speed and athleticism off the edge. 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067, an 0-3 start, which is what the Redskins are staring at. Is that reasonable, like, based on, the opponent, based on the injuries, based on what we know now? Or was that completely unexpected when you started the season, and even as you approach it now, looking at it and say, oh, how could they be 0-3? Oh, my God, that never happens. They have no chance. Kind of weigh in on that element. We'll get into some other things in the 8 o'clock hour as well. 800-636-1067 on the Fan. Well, maybe we're better than we thought. Maybe this defense can carry the torch. And then it went splat.
And I've never heard a toilet flush louder.
That's a lot of poop going down that toilet, man. Woo! Averaging giving up 31.5 points per game. And again, only 7 points were scored in that first half against Philadelphia. So really... if you look at it, they've given up 63 points so far in the 2 games. And, Peach, to your point, since halftime of the Eagles game, so in the last 6 quarters, they've given up 56 points. That's an average of 9 points plus per quarter. You know, which, I mean, essentially you might as well say a touchdown and a field goal per quarter. Sometimes teams don't even have 2 possessions in a quarter of football, depending on how things play out. They can't get off the field on third down. They've allowed 18 of 28. That extends the problem from last year, where they allowed almost 44% on third down. I mean, you know, you're watching that game on Sunday, and on one drive, I think it was the drive that they actually forced a field goal on the long drive, because the Cowboys, they just kept shooting themselves with penalty after penalty after penalty. But on one drive, Tony Pollard and Ben Jarwin were carving up the Redskins defense like they were Thanksgiving turkeys. Carving them up.
Not Ben Jarvis Green Ellis.
No, not Ben Jarvis Green Ellis. No, this was just Ben Jarwin, I think is his name. Double check that. Ben Jarwin and Tony Pollard. Not Marcus Pollard, Tony Pollard. But they were just carving them up. And if the Cowboys didn't implode with penalties, it would have been an easy 7 because they were inside the 10 before you knew it. And they drove all the way down the field. To me, with the injuries that they've had, where they've had them, and the lack of a running game. Am I surprised that the defense has been so bad? Of course. I guess in hindsight, we probably shouldn't. Again, I consider the Eagles and the Cowboys, when they're clicking, to be fairly elite offenses. And I know people are going to say, oh, what are you talking about? Dallas was terrible last year. No, they're not terrible. They've got a lot of talent.
They're better offense this year, a full year of Amari Cooper, and they have upgraded from Cole Beasley.
Absolutely.
And they have Witten back, a safety valve, like a security blanket.
No doubt.
And who knows Dak Prescott. Better quarterback than he has ever been.
Absolutely. And their offensive line is healthy and better right now because they didn't have Travis Frederick all of last year. He's back, and Lyle Collins is better, and their defense is better, at least in the front seven.
So the fact is, now I don't know if you want to say they were in that game against the Cowboys, probably weren't in it late, but they took the early lead. They had the halftime lead in Philly. Again, two very good teams. I'm going to try the optimistic spin here that they kind of hung for a while with maybe the two best teams in the NFC right now, unless you want to throw the Rams in there. And
I mean, they throw a couple of punches, right?
If they played any kind of defense, Russell. Yeah.
But in boxing parlance, they basically threw a couple of punches. They threw like one haymaker, right?
They won a couple of rounds in Philly. Okay. I mean, you know, they were ahead in the fight in Philly.
Sure. So. And then they got knocked out, basically, is what happened in like the ninth round. They got knocked out, which happens if you don't have enough depth, if you don't have enough talent, if you don't have enough counterpunch, quite honestly, just to, again, extend the boxing analogy. So I look at these two games and say, this is pretty much what I expected with differences. Again, I didn't expect the defense to be this bad, but I pretty much expected them not to win these games. Now, the question is,
they have not turned the ball over in 2 weeks.
Yeah, but they've had three near interceptions.
They have not turned the ball over in 2 weeks. I don't care near, coulda, woulda, shoulda.
I worry about this week, though.
They catches up to you. Case Keenum is on pace for 40 touchdowns and no interceptions.
Khalil Mack and Roquan Smith are going to change that real quickly.
Well, if they get to him, and that's...
Why wouldn't they have schemed
their way around, so far, the deficiencies in pass blocking. That was another thing. So we all thought the defense was going to be the strength. That's where your young stud draft picks are and your free agent signing. They got some speed, and you probably could run the ball. Geis is back. The disaster was going to be pass blocking. So far, they have not turned the ball over.
Right.
They've been adequate and sometimes pretty good with pass blocking. Some of that scheming it up. And I said in the preseason, Case Keenum can take a quick step, make a read, and throw it.
Yes.
And so they're getting the ball out quickly. So they're doing that, but they can't run and they can't play defense.
The left side of the offensive line, which was supposed to be horrendous, has been pretty good.
It's been okay.
They haven't been able to run, but they've been pretty good in pass pro.
It has not been a disaster.
No.
People thought you might be onto your fifth quarterback on that. Guys are going to actually literally be carried off in a stretch.
So far, Donald Penn and Eric Flowers have not been a problem. Now we'll see what happens this Monday night. All right, 800-636-1067. We got to take a quick timeout, top of the hour, and then we'll get back to your calls. See you, Dre. Also, we'll get to you guys that are waiting in line, 800-636-1067. Also, if you're a Redskins fan season ticket holder, are you definitely going to Monday Night Football, considering what the stage is, considering the history, considering that it's a Monday night, the traffic, the late time, all this stuff? Or are you mailing it in and bagging those games or that game, those tickets, selling them on the secondary market, whatever? How are you approaching as a ticket holder, specifically a season ticket holder, a game where a lot of people are not really confident and optimistic in the Redskins? 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067 on the Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.